Oh, this.
Okay, our final case this afternoon is number 17-1172, Industrial Models, Inc. versus SNF, Inc. Mr. Jansen.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. This is a special and important case involving sham litigation in which the District Court dismissed under Rule 12b-6 three antitrust counts and one related tortious interference count. Industrial Models submits...
Could I, before you get into that...
Yes.
We're going to allow you some extra time here. But there would seem to be a jurisdictional issue as to whether this appeal should come to this court or to a regional circuit, because there has to be... jurisdiction under the patent laws in the district court for the case to come here. And the question is, under MedImmune, was there jurisdiction over the patent declaratory judgment claim in the district court? My understanding is that you alleged a fairly specific thing that you wanted to do, so let's assume that the specificity requirement is satisfied, but there seems to be some lack of concreteness about what patents are involved, because they didn't allege a specific patent, and there is a reference in your motion for summary judgment, I guess, to four patents, and the district court gave this very broad declaratory judgment about sort of there's no patent rights anywhere, which seems a little odd. But how do we know that these four patents are what's involved here? How is this sufficiently concrete?
It is sufficiently concrete, but Your Honor's question certainly points to an interesting and very unusual wrinkle in the case. It is a patent declaratory judgment case for non-infringement. In one of its aspects, there was, of course, a count for that. And it actually relates specifically to the nature of the sham litigation, which was alleged in the antitrust and tortious interference counts, because there were specific, as I'm sure you're aware, allegations of patent infringement.
Well, specific is the word here. There were older allegations of patent infringement, where they said, you infringe our patents and our trade dress and a variety of other things.
Mm-hmm.
But did they ever identify a patent that they thought you infringed? I know you asked repeatedly, and I thought that they did not.
The closest that they came to it was, you can look up a patent yourself, which Industrial Models did indeed do, to try to ascertain whether or not there was anything relevant to Industrial Models' business. Industrial Models, in doing so, found that these were not relevant to its business and said so, but the requests which were repeated for the infringement allegations to be pulled back, to be retracted, never resulted in a retraction.
Let me ask you about the timeline here. So as I understand it, all of that exchange occurred before the March 19th, 2013 lawsuit, correct? About the patents.
That was not the only exchange about patents.
That was one exchange about patents.
So yes.
March 19th, 2013, they file a lawsuit, but it doesn't mention patents anywhere.
That's correct.
Right? Then August, because the lawsuit goes up on appeal. But July 2014, the Court of Appeals knocks out the judgment mm-hmm. on that lawsuit.
Yes.
You don't file a DJ action until a full year later.
Your Honor, that's incorrect. I think it would be helpful to describe some of the procedural reality. And if I may, I would like to first address one point relating to Judge Dyke's question, and then I would like to follow up by addressing your question, Judge O'Malley, because I think both of them are important here. First of all, with respect to this appeal, Industrial Models appeal was initially taken to the Fifth Circuit, and there was then a motion to move it to the Federal Circuit, and Industrial Models stipulated to that motion. We decided not to oppose it, and it was transferred to the Federal Circuit.
But the Fifth Circuit never ruled on that?
The Fifth Circuit transferred it here.
Okay. The Fifth Circuit transferred it, or just did you refile it?
The Fifth Circuit transferred it.
All right.
So what I guess you're implying is that we have to defer to the Fifth Circuit's judgment that the jurisdiction belonged here.
It isn't a question that we.
That's what the Supreme Court
has
said.
Yeah, well.
When one circuit transfers to another on the theory that the other circuit is properly has jurisdiction, we're supposed to defer to the First Circuit that makes the transfer.
Well, when Industrial Models made its appeal, of course, it was with respect to counts 1, 2, 3, and 7, which were antitrust and tortious interference. And so the Fifth Circuit was an absolutely unquestionably appropriate place for the appeal to land.
It's not an appropriate place for the appeal to land if there's a patent claim in the case, right? Which your declaratory
doesn't matter
judgment
what you
action,
appeal.
Was a declaratory judgment issue in the case when it went to the Fifth Circuit?
The declaratory judgment issues were in the case, but there was no appeal with respect to the declaratory judgment.
Well, that doesn't make any difference. Mm-hmm. Our jurisdiction is determined by the original situation in the district court. If the district court had jurisdiction under the patent laws, then the case comes here. The Fifth Circuit, by transferring the case, at least this is news to us, must have made a determination that this court had jurisdiction because the case rested on the patent laws.
The motion to transfer was unopposed, and it was then transferred. There was no comment from the Fifth Circuit to the extent I'm aware.
This was all one complaint, right?
Yes.
Okay, so when you say there was no ruling on the declaratory judgment, there was a ruling on your complaint.
There most certainly were rulings on declaratory judgment, but what I mean is that Industrial Models did not appeal with respect to the declaratory judgment counts. That's in the cross appeal.
Okay, but it was in the case originally.
It was in the case, certainly, yes.
So can I go back to my timeline? I understand
Absolutely.
That you filed an earlier lawsuit that was dismissed for improper venue.
That's right.
But having said that, there's still a year gap between when the trade dress that you say is part of the threats and your new lawsuit's filed, and there's a two-year gap between the transfer of the ownership rights and your filing of your new lawsuit. So what threats occurred between July of 2014 or August even of 2013 and July of 2015? What additional threats of patent infringement or any kind of infringement occurred in that time frame? Because you don't allege any even in your DJ action. You just allege this stuff generally that all appears to have occurred earlier in 2013.
First of all, let me make a distinction between precisely what is alleged in the complaint in terms of the volume and the repetition of infringement allegations made by the appellees and the sufficiency of a pleading. Those are two different things.
My point. Did anything occur?
Yes.
Between any threats between even August of 2013 and July of 2015?
Yes. There were. Are you asking specifically with respect to patents, Your Honor? Or
yes.
Are you generally?
With respect to patents.
I hate to defer to our brief, if I may. We laid out a
Wasn't
great number.
Was there a period in which you asked them to identify the patents? Am I mistaken about that?
There were constant, first of all, the litigation continued.
You know,
litigation,
you keep saying that, constant. Can you point to me anywhere where there is a point in time between the transfer of the patent and the filing of your lawsuit in July of 2015 where there was another threat as it relates to patents? Because, you know, you keep talking about threats, but all I can tell from the record is all those threats occurred before the trade dress lawsuit?
If you're asking specifically and exclusively about patents.
Anything that included patents. It doesn't have to be exclusively.
Okay.
So a patent. They said any time in that two-year time frame that you infringe a patent. I think that's a pretty easy question.
Well, the answer is
yes
that
no.
the answer is that Industrial Models asked them to make sure that to make a statement that there was they were free and clear to go forward, given the absence
of. When did that request get made?
As recently as 2015, just prior to the filing of this lawsuit, and also when, to Industrial Models' surprise, there was a motion for 12b-1 dismissal for alleged lack of subject matter jurisdiction in 2016, very right at the summary judgment deadline.
Are those requests or any responses to those requests in the record?
Yes. Those the requests are in the record.
Can you point me to them? Because I don't see them
yes,
being referenced in your brief.
I will need a moment to find the correct place in our brief where we reference them. But it will be in the section.
I think on May 22nd, 2015, you asked them to say that you didn't infringe any patents. Is that perhaps that's at 1371?
What occurred, I need to find it. There's a letter that was sent to a lawyer in Chicago representing SNF Inc.
We believed all of
the parties. In May 2015, it was sent because it actually expressly stated that there was, I need to find the date. If you look in the appendix, in appendix 2717 and 2718, that's an email which was sent by Industrial Models, our firm on behalf of Industrial Models, and the email had an attached letter which specifically reads, BrandFX has made trade dress, patent, and copyright infringement allegations against Industrial Models.
What page is this at?
This is on appendix 2718.
2718.
Okay, and what's the response?
There was no response, and it was admitted that there was no response in the answer. I would add, though, after May 22, 2015, Mr. Collins responded actually by saying, I no longer represent them. Please contact their counsel in Texas, which we then did, and that is shown in the next pages of the appendix. And we forwarded the same letter to our opposing counsel on June 3rd, 2015, and we asked them to respond to it. And that letter specifically said that the litigation could be narrowed and streamlined by a statement from BrandFX finally acknowledging the non-existence of any trade dress, patent, or copyright infringed or potentially infringed by Industrial Models. Perhaps BrandFX is willing now to make such a statement. They did not respond.
All right. So do you have, was there any evidence between the August 2013 transfer and this exchange in May 22nd, 2015, that you had a basis to ask this question? In other words, there were continuing threats against you?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, I would say that the trade dress, patent, and copyright allegations were made together, and then there was the litigation which began in the Texas
right,
State Court.
Right, and that's over in July of 2014.
Well, it's not over because the first step of the plaintiff, which was called SNF Inc. DBA BrandFX Body Company, and we understand that at that point, after August 30, 2013, to have been the shared enterprise, the common enterprise of the three appellees. Now the appellees have said in their briefing that after the reversal of the default judgment in the Texas State Court, they did nothing more with their lawsuit. That is inaccurate. They filed an emergency motion expressly saying that their intellectual property rights would be infringed if Industrial Models went forward in its intended business.
Which intellectual property rights? Did they specify which?
Well, it was the trade dress case,
trade
so they
dress.
Said trade dress.
Okay.
Yes.
So clarify something for me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My understanding is that someone over on the other side was manufacturing an insert for trucks. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And someone over on your side purchased one of those models, and I think the word was dipped it.
Word that the appellees have used is splashed, but that's inaccurate. Actually, in the deposition, there's no evidence whatsoever that that occurred. And even the allegation made is not of industrial models having done that. Industrial models bought some molds that were available on the marketplace and was proceeding. It had fully geared up to produce. And it had nothing to do with the creation of the molds.
Listen when I talk. Okay?
I'll try.
And from whence did that mold come?
It came from a company called Badger Truck.
Right. And Badger in Wisconsin is alleged to have splashed it. Is that correct?
They are alleged to have done so, yes.
Is there any denial of that?
Industrial models had nothing to do whatsoever with what Badger Truck may or may not have done. The evidence that was presented for that allegation by the appellees at the district court was found to be hearsay evidence and inadmissible.
Did Badger Truck refuse to deal with you during this time period or anything?
What happened was that Badger Truck didn't have an opportunity ultimately to deal with industrial models because industrial models was coerced, frightened out of proceeding in its business, which it was intending to do, including with Badger Truck.
Well, so there's no resolution one way or the other of this allegation of copying, right?
There's no evidence for it.
Well, I understand, but it's not before us. Whether there was copying or not copying is not before us, right?
I mean, whether there was copying or not is not before you. That's correct.
Yeah.
But at summary judgment, none was found.
My concern is, and I'm going to ask your opposing counsel for details on this, but is the trade dress claims.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, in some fashion, if hypothetically someone takes someone else's product, makes a mold that exactly copies it, and it does have trade dress to it, then that person has a problem. My question to your opposing counsel is, where's the trade dress? But my question to you is, do we get that far?
We don't have to get that far because if you do that and it's a tennis ball, it's yellow, it's fuzzy, it's got a number on it, and it doesn't have a trade dress. It's a tennis ball. If it's a cardboard box, it's a cardboard box. You know, you've got to have something about it.
Sure, but that's their problem. But if you copied that tennis ball, i.e. you made a mold of it, and however you do tennis balls, and produced it, and someone said, well, they copied my tennis ball and produced it, that in itself is an allegation of something. Isn't and then, of course, they have to say, here's the trade dress.
The fact of the matter is that copying of things that don't have
yes,
any intellectual have property
attached
to them
is fine. Yes, they have to say that there's trade dress, that copying alone is
right.
not violation. They have
right.
to show that they had protectable yeah. trade dress.
Right, right. But it's in any event,
I'm
never
trying to get the facts now, Dan, before I ask them the questions about what on this thing demonstrates trade dress.
We believe nothing. And we believe that the evidence in summary judgment shows nothing.
Why don't you sit down at this point? We'll give you time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And let's hear from opposing counsel.
May it please the court, Michael Anderson on behalf of the appellees and cross appellants.
Okay, so the only evidence you presented from customers for trade dress inquiry is from three people who sell and distribute your utility molds. And am I correct, that's it?
That is correct, Your Honor. That is from Mike Dunnigan, Ron Zimmer, and Jay Jeffrey.
Are they actually purchasing the molds as well?
Not the molds, just the actual product, the end product.
Why haven't you presented any additional direct consumer testimony to show secondary meaning?
Because for purposes of summary judgment, we brought forward testimony from these three individuals, and these three individuals, their testimony is enough to raise a genuine issue fact.
I don't understand how that's true, because there's no testimony that the particular model that industrial plan to produce was protected by your trade dress. There's no connection there between the two.
Two issues here. And the issue when you say, well, there's no issue about what industrial models intended to produce, when SNF filed the lawsuit, what it knew was is that Badger had made a mold of an SNF.
Well, we're not talking about that. In the course of this lawsuit, they have identified what the model is that they plan to produce. It's very specific. It's like the Badger Warrior model. Let's just assume that. You may not agree with it, but let's assume that. What's missing, it seems to me, in your summary judgment opposition is any connection between that Warrior model and protectable trade dress that your client has. And I looked at the opposition to the summary judgment motion. I don't see that in there.
If you're talking about a comparison of our trade dress to the Warrior model, no, I don't believe that is in there, other than because that is the Warrior, the Badger model. Oh. That is not the industrial model's
ultimate. Where's your evidence of non-functionality? You have affidavit from an individual by the name of Lee Finley, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
How's that enough to overcome the presumption of functionality for design products in 1125A3?
Well, his testimony goes to...
It's very vague.
...the issue as to the shape.
It's very vague.
I disagree. Where he talks about the shape, and then we have testimony from him, the shape and curvatures of the body, front to back, top to bottom, and it is no different than the cases that have found trade dress in car bodies, the General Motors case, the Ferrari case, the Bentley case that we cited, the first two out of the Sixth Circuit.
Well, that may be, but what you didn't do is to make any connection between your trade dress and their alleged infringement.
The issue at that point in time was
for summary judgment on a declaratory judgment of no trade dress infringement.
The issue at that point in time, Your Honor, was they did not have a definite and final design. The testimony of
Let's assume we disagree with you about that. It doesn't have to be a final design. They said we're going to produce something like the Warrior model. And using these molds. Let's assume they said that. I think it's pretty clear in the record that they've alleged that. And in their summary judgment motion, you came back, you didn't identify how that would infringe your trade dress. Why isn't summary judgment on the trade dress claim appropriate under those circumstances?
Okay, well, you can go back a step further. Summary judgment never would have been appropriate on the trade dress claim because there was no justiciable controversy when this lawsuit was filed.
I'm asking to assume that you're wrong about that. We'll come to the patents in a moment. But as to the trade dress claim, there's a specific allegation that they planned to produce this model and that there were threats and, in fact, a lawsuit of claims of trade dress infringement. And they moved they brought a declaratory judgment action seeking a declaratory judgment of no trade dress infringement. You did not respond to that and say what they're planning to do is an infringement of our trade dress.
I believe the way they couched it was we had no trade dress capable of being infringed.
No, but try to address my question because that's important. There is no evidence in opposition to the summary judgment motion that what they were planning to do in terms of the Warrior model, and accept that, infringed your trade dress.
In terms of the Warrior model, that is correct.
Okay. Now, could we shift for a moment to the patent claim? Do you allege that they have infringed any of your patents?
No, we do not and have not.
Are you willing to give a covenant not to sue?
No, we're not, and we're not required
to. Why not?
We're not required to because ultimately...
Well, you can't just at one and the same time say, you know, we've had cases like this where, you know, they say, oh, no, we're not saying they infringe the patents, but on the other hand, we're not willing to give a covenant not to sue. You have to fish or cut bait. You have to say one way or the other whether there's a live controversy here as to patent infringement.
there is not a live controversy, and it's not a fish or cut bait issue because we haven't gotten to that point.
You accused them of patent infringement, did you not?
Accused them up front, SNF, not Brand FX Holding, not Brand FX, only SNF. From the initial email from Mr. Finley, said we have patents that cover this. We ultimately didn't find out what their final product was. In fact, in discovery, we asked for it. In this case, they haven't given us specificity enough for us to be able to do a claim-by-claim comparison to their final product.
That's simply not true. They have told you that they plan to use to copy the Warrior model of Badger and to produce according to that, and that they're afraid that if they do that, they'll be sued by you for trade dress, copyright, and patent infringement.
Well,
so you surely ought to be able to give them a covenant not to sue to say that if they produce the Warrior model, we don't claim, you know, we covenant not to sue you for patent infringement. Why are you unable to do that?
We don't have enough information to be able to do that.
Well,
Mr. Henderson, I have to tell you something. The one area that has bothered me some is the attorney's fees area. And the judge, on one hand, has a lot of discretion. On the other hand, I'm not seeing as much as I would be happy with to affirm on that. But you're convincing me that he was right your argument.
Well, let me address that then. The patent issue, SNF no longer owned any patents, all right? So at the time they asked us, tell us what patents, Brand FX, the company that had the patents, had made no decision and hasn't looked at it
at all.
Okay, look,
the district court said that he was going to treat them as a unit. Let's assume that that was right and that we're going to do the same thing, that you can't avoid a declaratory judgment by transferring your intellectual property rights to a subsidiary. Let's assume that for the moment. You need to address the question of whether, under those circumstances, there is an allegation of trade dress infringement or patent infringement with respect to this model that they have identified, the Warrior model.
There has been no comparison to that product. We believed, and the defense was simply that because there was no controversy, that no threat had been made, it wasn't transferred to a subsidiary.
So why not give them a covenant not to sue with respect to producing the Warrior model?
We simply did not.
Or even give them the courtesy of a response to their letter to say, at this time we know of no potential for patent infringement. You didn't even bother to respond.
No, we did not respond. That is correct.
What I'm saying is I'm beginning to understand Judge McBride's frustration with you and why he imposed attorney's fees.
You wanted to keep the specter of the threat over their head instead of being willing to resolve the very real question of whether there really is any intellectual property that you could assume.
Well, I don't believe that's quite accurate. What we have here is step back for a second. Once the state court lawsuit, once it was reversed on the service of process, SNF no longer had the intellectual property, all right? We're all there. No longer had it, and then it was it dismissed the case, completely dismissed it. And then everything leading up from the other side was always angled at manufacturing an antitrust claim, and therefore it was, look, these guys are trying to manufacture an antitrust claim. We're not going to respond to them. We don't have any duty to respond to them. Maybe it would have been professional courtesy.
You accused them of infringement, and you refused to tell them what the basis for it is. And then you sue them for trade dress infringement. When you brought the suit in Texas court, you were able to identify and allege what they were planning to do and said that it was trade dress infringement. Somehow then you got into federal court, and all of a sudden it's a mystery what they're going to do.
Well, what it was in state court was they had our very specific molds. They had our specific molds that was a complete copy of our product that we believe had trade dress.
They're saying they're going to use those molds. It's the same thing that you sued them about before.
But now they're saying it's going to be like the Badger with improvements and we're going to change it. And we asked them.
No, they didn't say that they were going to change it. Show me where in the record they said they were going to change it.
I believe it's the affidavit of Mr. Waller.
What's the appendix site?
The appendix site we have is 1163. We have paragraphs 5.
Wait. 1163?
There isn't an 1163.
No, there's no 1163.
There's no 1163.
Do what?
There's no such page in the appendix.
I have the wrong page on my sheet then, Your Honors, and I apologize.
Well, what's the right page?
What's the name of the affidavit?
It is the affidavit. It's a declaration of Fred Haller.
Spell it.
Haller, H-A-L-L-E-R.
Okay. Opposing counsel, do you know if it's in the record?
Now, you have to stand up when you address the court.
Your Honor, there are two declarations of Fred Haller. I'm not sure which one your opposing counsel is referring to. One begins on Appendix 935, and the other one, there are at least two, I should say, quickly looking. Another one begins up on Appendix page...
Okay. Which one is it, please?
I do not have it. If I may have the courtesy.
You didn't bring the appendix with you?
Well, I had it on the laptop, and I had the site, and I wrote it down wrong.
You're supposed to bring the appendix with you.
I would add there's a third one starting on Appendix 1061.
Maybe opposing counsel will lend you his appendix.
Yes, it is Appendix 880 through 882 is the declaration. Thank you.
And what paragraphs, please?
The paragraph 5 and paragraphs 9 talk about planned products. There's nothing more than the plan. It's not
contemplated is in 9. Let's see.
And planned is in 5.
Well, but this is your witness, right?
No, it's not. This is their witness.
This is their witness?
And this went to our issue that there was no final and definite design. And that was the issue that we couldn't compare anything to other than them simply now sending
a
picture.
Hold on. Wait a moment. You say paragraph 5. It says industrial models planned products were like the Badgers, the Warrior, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Where does it say they were changed?
Well, if we look at 9 is where...
It says contemplated in 9. I don't have to look.
And then 5 is the planned. This is what we planned. Our planned products were like... And what we said was that was not a definite and final design when you take that in conjunction with just simply a picture of a product. And then you take that in connection with we had served discovery requests asking for the design specifications, the engineering drawings, and had not received any of those to actually do a side-by-side comparison to tell them that...
If you consult the transcript of this oral argument, you will find that you told this court that there were planned changes, not planned models. You use the word planned changes, and then you refer to changes are contemplated as opposed to planned. But what you told us wasn't accurate, and this does not support it.
I apologize, Your Honor.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll give you 3 minutes for rebuttal here.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will try to be efficient here. It is true that Mr. Haller's declaration, Mr. Haller is the owner and CEO of Industrial Models, does not contemplate does not speak of any change, and there is none intended. The design of the outward look of the design of these products is that of the warrior that's determined by the mold shape, which is not the shape, incidentally, of any brand effects products, and that was shown at summary judgment.
Let's assume for the moment that the district court was correct in giving a declaratory judgment of no infringement of trade dress, copyright, patents. What about your antitrust claim? The district court rejected your antitrust claim. That's the basis for your appeal. What is the reason that he made an error? Because if I understand correctly, in these Norr Pennington cases, you've got to have one of two things. You've either got to have collective action by multiple parties, or you've got to have an attempt to monopolize. At the time that these threats were made, were there separate entities here, or was everything done by SNF?
It occurred both prior to August 30, 2013, and after. So yes and yes. There were times when there was a single entity, SNF, and there were times after August 30, 2013, when they were acting as a common enterprise. And the pleading involved says that they came together intentionally and agreed to do so.
Even if they were acting in a concerted way with respect to the judge felt that collectively with respect to the threats as it relates to the intellectual property, isn't it true that under antitrust law, which is a totally different animal, that a corporation cannot conspire with its subsidiaries?
Certainly the Copperweld case stands for the fact that a parent company cannot conspire with its wholly owned subsidiary. It actually expressly says it's not taking into account subsidiaries that are less than wholly owned. And Copperweld is the case that they
run. But isn't wholly owned by SNF?
It is not.
I think in the sanctions motion there's an allegation that it is.
They are all bound up in ownership agreements. If you look, you will see that SNF is a part owner of BrandFX Holdings, which is a sole owner of BrandFX LLC. With respect to the mistakes of the district court in dismissing on 12b-6 the antitrust and tortious interference counts, the core mistake is that the district court found that the sham litigation exception to Norr Pennington did not apply. That's a big mistake because the sham litigation exception to Norr Pennington, as defined by Professional Real Estate Investors, the 1993 Supreme Court case, and frequently cited by the Federal Circuit, says that if the litigation or the litigation threats were objectively baseless, which is clearly the case here since there was no intellectual property behind the threats, and if the subjective intent of the party accusing another of infringement is to interfere with that other party's ability to compete, that is sham litigation, and Norr Pennington does not apply.
The fact that it's sham litigation isn't sufficient to state an antitrust claim. There has to be collective action by separate parties or an attempt to monopolize.
A sole entity, can engage in sham litigation against others under Sherman Act Section 2.
Section 2, an attempt to monopolize, but it can't be a Section 1 violation.
We have Sherman Act 1 and Sherman Act 2 claims in this case. So that is relevant. There are other points of mistake made by the district court. One is an adverse inference against the plaintiff, which is inappropriate at the pleading stage. The district court found that because Industrial Models had stopped its manufacturing once threatened with litigation, it must have believed that there was some basis for the threat and for the litigation that then ensued. There's no evidence for that. There's simply nothing like that in the pleading. And so for the district court to have found that there was a basis on the basis of the subjective thoughts of the party that faced the litigation threat and the litigation It's just not supported by professional real estate investors or any of the related case laws concerning the sham litigation exception. And also...
I think we're out of time.
Thank you.
I think Mr. Anderson will give you 1 minute on the cross appeal.
Thank you, Your Honor. As to the cross appeal issue, the central issue is simply, was there a case or controversy at the time the lawsuit was filed in 2015? I would submit there was nothing at that point in time to give rise to a case or controversy to the three declaratory judgment claims. SNF no longer owned any intellectual property, and therefore it couldn't be a proper party to a declaratory judgment claim for infringement there.
There is a little bit of inconsistency between your argument that you were all separate entities and therefore couldn't be, you were the same entities and therefore couldn't really conspire with each other in your antitrust arguments, and then say, on the other hand, that you're all completely separate despite all the common ownership channels.
The issue, I don't believe... it's the inconsistency at all there. It is under the copper weld, you look at, are you different economic actors? And here, as they allege us in there, we're not, even though they do allege and we are separate legal entities, the allegation that was at issue there was we were all common enterprise, with Lee Finley being common management. It's a different issue, though, as to who can enforce any intellectual property rights. And the argument is simply this, is that SNF, at the time in 2015, when the declaratory judgment actions are brought, it did not own any intellectual property as to this issue. Brand FX Holdings did not own anything. Rather, the intellectual property rested in Brand FX LLC. Brand FX LLC has done nothing except defend and respond to this lawsuit.
What is the relationship among the three companies?
I believe the relationship is, as represented there, is that SNF has an ownership part of Brand FX Holdings. Brand FX Holdings is the holding company for Brand FX LLC.
What percentage ownership does SNF have in Brand X?
I'm sorry.
What percentage ownership does SNF have in Brand X Holdings?
I do not know the answer to that.
Okay. All right. Thank both counsel. The case is submitted.